hustle and grind is fine. You know, we all have to do it, but not to the point where we are exhausted all the time, where we don't like doing the work that we do, where we're resentful, where we're not putting forth our best work.
You're busy, we know. We cut through the BS and give you straight talk advice, whether you're a seasoned entrepreneur or just starting out. Our Small Business Big Insights podcast dives straight to the point on key topics and features interviews with industry experts and successful small business owners who share their deep insights. Tune in each month to gain new ideas and inspiration for your own small business.
Welcome to the Small Business Big Insights podcast. I'm so excited to share this episode today with some big insights from our very special guest, Anastasia Valentine, who helps us better understand real marketing for revenue growth for your small business. I invite you right now to subscribe to the podcast or you'll miss out on some exciting upcoming episodes. Also, give us a review on the podcast platform of your choice and spread the message. Let us know how we're doing. So today we're joined by Anastasia Valentine. Anastasia is a highly accomplished and award-winning technology leader, widely recognized in the industry for her expertise. Throughout her impressive 32-year career, she's played pivotal roles for growth and success of numerous companies in various technology fields, including business intelligence, artificial intelligence, finance, and more. Anastasia works with business leaders of all types to help them scale their business. She advises on how to attract perfect customers and how to create efficient marketing and sales processes, design incredible customer experiences, and leverage business data to tell its story to make the best business decisions. I love this. Her powerful and thought-provoking keynote speeches have inspired and motivated audiences across various fields, including academia, technology, private, and public sector. Anastasia is also the author of two children's books designed to introduce and teach multiple languages in a fun, repeatable, and musical way. This is lovely. I like it. We're very lucky to have Anastasia today, so welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Eric. It's great to be here.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. Well, let's get straight into it. We want to get some value here. So you've held these roles of Chief Revenue Officer, which a lot of people don't really hear of very often. And so how does that differ from like a Chief Marketing or Chief of Sales in a way?
I think it actually brings them together in one body. So what I like about the Chief Revenue Officer role is many times, and certainly it's been my experience, where we've had marketing and sales under one umbrella. So they're not kind of like saying, hey, get me leads. And the marketing is saying, hey, close some leads. They're actually working in concert with each other. And by having them on the same page, working together, and, you know, like you mentioned in my bio, using data to tell a story, it can be a really powerful team, one team, not two teams, but one team driving the revenue for new business for an organization.
Interesting. Okay. So that basically you wouldn't normally have like a VP of marketing and a VP of sales and a VP of revenue. Like it's kind of like all one group typically. Is that how you kind of frame it?
I think it really depends on the size of the organization, because you can have someone who has a ton of experience with marketing and sales and have them take on the role of Chief Revenue Officer. I think it's really important that they have really great strengths in both of those to take on that role. But then also have a really good understanding of business operations so that you could understand, you know, when the money comes in, how it's allocated, how you can get ROI, and then measure some of those KPIs that are really important to the entire organization.
Interesting. Okay. And I guess like from your own experience, you've worked with so many kind of companies, right? And so what do you think is kind of the biggest untapped revenue opportunity for a lot of the small businesses that might be listening today?
Oh my goodness. I think with small businesses, let's say a startup or a scale up, or even like solopreneurs is really tapping into your network, creating a wealth of data in your CRM. And, you know, when you're just starting out, your CRM might be in a spreadsheet and that's okay. Or it could be something like HubSpot or something a little bit more developed, but really mapping out like, who do you know? Who can you help? Not so much who can help you, because I think that people go about it the wrong way. It's really, if you pay it forward, you show that you can add value, then you can tap into people, help them, and then show what you can do. when you create a CRM with all of these people, potential customers, and you get yourself out there, that's really your gold mine. And over the years, that's going to be the place where you go back and say, hey, you know, maybe we weren't the right fit this time. Maybe we're a right fit now. Or, hey, have your needs changed? Is there a way that we can help you in a different way? That's probably the place where I think that small businesses can find an untapped source, if you will, without spending a lot of money.
Yeah, I think that's super interesting. Because like, I think a lot of small business owners kind of get into the trap of responding to leads when they come in, basically. And they don't necessarily keep track of all the previous leads that have come in and then reach back out to them and all of that. And I guess, like you're saying, like, these are people that have shown interest in your products in the past. So like, they're very likely to want to show that interest again in the future, right? So that's super interesting. And so you also talked in your bio here, you talked about how, you know, businesses can create a more efficient marketing or sales process in addition to kind of like designing incredible customer experiences. What's the starting point when you do work like that? Like, what's kind of, you get a new client and then you want to create a more efficient marketing or a sales process. What's the first step that you go about?
Sure. And I think it's changing your mindset from, you know, kind of throwing things at the wall and seeing if it sticks and being really laser focused. So we talked a little bit about our perfect fit customer. Well, who is that? Where do they go? What do they do? What's a great way to connect with them? What is a way that you can add value to them before you even meet them, before they even start talking to you? So I think in that way, creating a process and making it exclusively for your perfect fit customer. Sometimes when the cupboards are bare, you're like, anyone with a wallet will do, but you'll find out very quickly that is a very short-term solution and it probably won't serve you really, really well. Sometimes you got to do it and totally get that. But if you start creating processes and then see what works very quickly, and my philosophy and ethos is add value at every single interaction. It doesn't matter if they pay you or not. Add value at every single interaction, click, conversation, whatever it happens to be.
No, I like it. Because I mean, yeah, like I guess in sales, it always takes multiple touch points before someone actually decides to work with you, right? So if at every single touch point you can add value, then it really kind of amplifies your impact on them. Instead of kind of saying, you'll get value after you sign, you know, like it's like, yeah, you can kind of show them that value. So that's interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of craptastic, right? No one loves that kind of sales experience.
Yeah. And I guess that does provide a really good kind of client experience or customer experience, right? And I guess you've kind of talked about how part of your specialty is creating that incredible customer experience. What's kind of the trick to that? Like how do you go about figuring out how to provide the most incredible customer experience?
I think that the first thing is to listen more and talk less. It's you really want to listen to what's going on in the industry. What are the pain points of your customer? And then address those in various capacities up until the revenue kicks in. Like you need to provide something so that people will be attracted to you and attracted to what you do. But there is a line. There's a line between, you know, helping, and then it's when revenue kicks in, and that's where the product will be sold or the service will be delivered or whatever, you know, your revenue model happens to be. But being mindful of not wasting anyone's time. No one wants to be pitched and sold to as soon as they connect on LinkedIn, for example. We all have that problem, right? So by providing that value at every interaction up until, you know, it's time to start exchanging a different level of value is absolutely key. And you might have to try a couple of things before that's mapped out, but being very mindful of not eroding your value and your revenue.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And I guess let's try and be practical here. And do you have kind of examples of some of the value that you can provide some of your prospects before they sign, right? Like, is it just kind of like trying to answer their questions or trying to like give them links to like an article that was interesting? Like kind of walk me through some of those ideas.
Yeah. I mean, I think those are really great things. I think, if you're leading up to that value exchange or that revenue exchange, maybe putting some time in the game. If they aren't truly, in fact, your perfect fit customer, maybe you spend 15 minutes with them and say, let's do a lightning round of strategizing and see if we're a good fit. Before that, you may have articles that give them steps on how to improve productivity or generate content or whatever it happens to be that, that you offer. Let's say if you're just starting out in bookkeeping, well, here are the things you have to get in order to start. Get them prepared so that when they do become a customer, or not, I mean, recognizing that people may not become a customer, they will still know that you treated them with respect and gave them value, up until, you know, that, that revenue line. But that can be done in blog articles. That could be done in, like, ebooks are kind of like a thing of the past, but like this podcast, for example, that's a great value exchange. Little snippets, really, really consumable content, like do these five things before you create the best content of your life or something. But prepare them for success and set them up for success.
Interesting. Yeah. And I guess on the topic of success, I've kind of heard as well that you've been pretty vocal about your advocacy for canceling. Speaking of success, I heard about your vocal nature around canceling hustle culture. And so what's your beef with that? What's the story there?
What's my beef with that? I think, you know what, it's just my experience. And when, you know, when we're starting out and we can take on the world and we've got all the energy in the world and we may not have all the commitments that we'll have later in life. And, you know, we're putting everything and then some in. And you can do that. And I think, you know, that's a really good way to start. But recognize you can't do that forever without it taking a toll on you. So by, you know, hustle and grind is fine. You know, we all have to do it, but not to the point where we are exhausted all the time, where we don't like doing the work that we do, where we're resentful, where we're not putting forth our best work, where we get sick, like, or where our personal life starts to suffer. And I think those are the warning signs, is when those things start to happen, is like, is this truly worth it? And in technology, I mean, it happens, especially when you're a founder or you're a startup. You get that fire in your belly and sometimes it's hard to stop. Like it's exciting and like you want to go there and do all the things. And you don't want to slow that down, but you can work smarter. You can work in a way that, you know, get up from your desk at least every hour. Do a walk around the block. Do a walk and talk meeting instead of sitting at a screen. Like there are so many things that you can do. And then I'd also, you know, consult with your peers. Like, what are you guys going through? Like you're a founder too. You're a business owner. How are you feeling? You know, do you want to go for a coffee and not talk shop, and support each other? But there is a level where people really have to look at their personal life. And is it being negatively affected by what you do? And can you work differently?
Yeah. And I think that especially in sales where, you know, you're adding so much value when you're in sales and, you know, closing a client, and it can be hard to kind of say, I got to take it easier and take on slightly less clients or whatnot. Right. Like it's, it can be a trouble. And I guess, have you seen that part of your own clients? Like, have you been helping people through that? Like what's your experience on seeing clients going through kind of like a burnout, I guess?
Yeah, it's exactly that. And you can burn out multiple times in your career. And sometimes we don't care. We just keep on doing it. And I've done that, you know, where you finally just can't do anymore. And I've worked with amazing business leaders that are just like, enough. Because you want to take on more and you want to do more. But I think we can look at it in a different way. My mom says always, you know, turn your head on it, you know, stand on your head about it.
Turn your head on it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think if we look at it in a way, if we're getting maxed out, that's the point where we probably are growing and we need more resources. So how do we do that? If you're a salesperson and you're taking on too much or none of your deals are closing, like it's an opportunity to step back and say, okay, what's happening here? Do we need some more help? Do I need to work differently? Do I need to cut these things out because they're just not working or wasting everybody's time? I think if we look at it as opportunities to work smarter and just be honest with ourselves about things that aren't working, because sometimes, you know, as business leaders, we're very passionate about what we do and we don't want to believe that what we're doing is not working. And just say, hey, you know, I tried it. that was a good try and maybe it's not right for right now. So let's shelve that for now and do this thing, because if I double down here, it's going to pay off.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, from what I've noted too, just like, you know, social media and stuff. And when you see all these videos and content about hustling and working super hard, and like, I think it's really easy for people to kind of share that content or create content about them working super hard, all nonstop, barely sleeping, and like just trying to grow their business all the time. And that's what people like to watch on social media, but maybe that's not actually what's happening in real life, you know? And so I think that kind of creates that unrealistic expectation or narrative around like, you have to nonstop work in order for your business to succeed. And I think that, yeah, that's just not sustainable, right? Like you said, like you'll burn out, and you even said you'll probably burn out multiple times in your career if you don't stop, you know? And that's, yeah, I think that's super, super interesting. Yeah. I mean, from my own perspective, I think that, you know, you need to kind of look at the wholesome view of a business owner's career, right? And if you look at like being a business owner as a job description, like you need to kind of be in that industry for a long time, and you need to kind of like act differently than a person who has a job, and you have to set your own boundaries because no one's going to set those boundaries for you. Whereas when you're in a workplace, your boss can see you working a little too long and they're going to tell you, they're going to be like, hey, you should go home or whatever. But when you're the boss,
I hope they do,
you know, like, yeah, maybe they'll do that, but maybe they won't, but you have a chance, you know? And if you have a business partner, maybe they'll tell you too. Right. But if you're an employee, like, yeah, it's very different than as the business owner, where you have to set your own boundaries. Right. And I mean, my own dad, like he always kind of told me to work smart and not hard. Right. So kind of think through what you're actually going to be doing and why. And then once you kind of zone in on the strategy and on the tactic, then go ahead and execute really well. But don't just work hard for the purpose of working hard. Like that's a little bit, I mean, in a way it's like easier to just constantly work hard, not towards your goals, right? Because it's just kind of like setting your head down like a workhorse that's just going to like tunnel vision and just walk, right? But you need to kind of think of the bigger picture. Yeah. So, And I mean, just for, again, sorry, just to go on a little tangent, but a lot of our own clients I've seen too have this kind of issue where, you know, they're very passionate about their business, right? And I feel like the ones that are the most passionate about their business, they're the ones who are falling into this issue more and more, right? So whether they're a dance studio owner or they're, you know, they have a little hobby business on the side, or they run a little brewery and they're trying to make it, you know, and those are the ones that are just hustling so hard because they want to prove to everyone that they can make it. You know, and so that I think that's super interesting. I'm glad that there's kind of a vocal voice around kind of the shadow narrative of hustle culture. So that's interesting.
Yeah, and it's not like we're slacking off or anything. We can still work hard, but work hard on the right things. And one of the right things is making sure your body is in great shape to serve, you know, all the purposes that it needs to serve, including being healthy.
This episode of Small Business Big Insights is brought to you by ZenBooks. ZenBooks is a reimagined full-service online accounting experience. I work at ZenBooks, and we bring a fresh, unique, and modern approach to a very old-fashioned industry. We've been working remotely well before it was cool. And we're a team of advisors, accountants, and payroll professionals that provide ongoing, impactful insights to small business owners and key decision makers. That means that we get into the nitty-gritty of weekly calls with ongoing reporting, bookkeeping, payroll, tax filings, and tax planning. Even if you already have an accountant or a bookkeeper, or you have some accounting staff on your team, you should talk to ZenBooks about the tools and expertise that they have to offer. Check out ZenBooks at zenbooks.ca. Now let's get back to the episode.
Yeah, no, it's good. And I know like you've been pretty vocal about AI and in AI and content creation. And I think there's a lot of people that are kind of like worried within their jobs or careers and the impacts that it's having on society. What's been your experience around AI when it comes to content creation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's so many ways that you can use AI to help you, right? In fact, you know, I'm working with a company right now who does exactly that for social. And I view AI as an assist. People still can create great content. You can use it as a method of inspiration if you use ChatGPT, for example. I think that if you can pretty much spot when something has been manufactured and generated versus, you know, having a human touch. And in fact, you can even use ChatGPT to tell you, was this written by you?
Oh, really?
And it will tell you, which is kind of cool. But I think that, you know, at the same time, we have to scale, and it's all about working mm-hmm. smarter. So let's say, for example, you create a great blog article. It's evergreen. It's really popular. Well, why not slice it and dice it in a number of ways so that it's consumable? It's still yours, mm-hmm. but maybe it's been done using a tool or something else. Mm-hmm. I think in those that way, it's really, really great. It's also a really great research tool. Like ChatGPT can find facts that you couldn't otherwise find. It's up to you as a human to verify those are true, because it only knows what is fed. So in that
and
way,
it's come up with fake facts as well, right? So you do have to do that research. Yeah,
and you don't want to be on the other side of that news, right? So in that way, it's still your responsibility as a marketer, as a business owner, as a content creator to make sure what you're providing and what you're delivering is true and valuable. Mm-hmm. So by all means, use it as an inspiration source and an assist. But I think there's still definitely a very, very strong place for humans when it comes to content, journalism, and creating the words and the things that we see.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if we kind of get into the philosophical perspective of AI, like if it becomes so easy to create content using AI, does that not mean that there's going to be plenty of content that's used, that's basically created through AI or whatnot? Like if it's easy for us to just create 100 articles in 10 days on topics in, let's say, the accounting industry, like, isn't every accountant going to just do that? And now there's going to be kind of like an oversaturation of content. Like there's going to be too much content in a way, right?
Yeah, I mean, it can be done that way. And it, you know what? It probably already is. It probably already is. I did a very unscientific poll on LinkedIn not too long ago. It's like, do you care if the content you read is AI created?
Interesting. Yeah.
Or human created? And
wait, what was the result of this? Now I want to know. Yeah.
It was like 60-40. 60 don't care, 40 do care. And I have to question, well, why? If it's
like, why do you care? Like,
if it's good content, does it really matter? Do you like, I have to really question why.
Hmm. And because I guess part of the issue about AI creating content is that, you know, AI is based on other information that's previously been written to kind of like understand it and regurgitate it in maybe a new way, right? And so in theory, are you not essentially never creating anything new or original because everything's always going to be based on something that was done before?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think that's where using it as an assist, as opposed to as the core content creation, is probably something that you want to do, is to have that human kind of like checking, like kind of like, you know, your teacher marks your work, check the work to make sure it's accurate. And you have a responsibility as a content creator or anyone who's developing content to do that and who's publishing mm-hmm. content in any way to make sure that it is accurate and it is valuable. If you're just using it to create content to spew back into the world, I don't know. I question the value of that.
Right. Interesting. And I guess kind of like what you're saying, where you know, people will gather content and then they'll regurgitate it to reshare it. And are there not intellectual property issues or copyright issues that come with that, where, you know, basically ChatGPT or other AI tools are using information that another company took the time to actually humanly prepare and then regurgitating it again? And so they're basically taking maybe copyrighted material. Right.
Well, and you've seen this, like, not only with text, but especially with, let's say, Dolly, for example, that's generating visuals, where you're saying, give me a panda riding a unicorn, or give me this person doing this. And, you know, that puts ethics into question. There's deep fakes that are involved. There's people's art that are being, you know, leveraged as data. So where do we draw the line there? I think that this is going to be an evolving thing that we have to keep an eye on. And I think that it's important for us to have a really solid voice and a human voice moving forward. And, you know, you're right, creating original content and maybe, you know, doing so, you're feeding the machine. But I don't see it going back right now. I don't see it as us canceling AI. I think it's something that we need to monitor from a news perspective, from a deep fake perspective, from an intellectual property perspective, especially when it comes to someone's words, art, or art.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess I could, like, we could also look at it from the other perspective of saying that, you know, to gather information that someone else put out to regurgitate it into our own content, isn't that what humans do? Like, we read a textbook to understand it, and then we regurgitate it in our own way, right? So we are always using information that was already available to kind of create maybe new information, right? And so, you know, is it really kind of intellectual property, like, stealing if, like, that's what we're already doing? We're reading content to kind of come up with our own thoughts, right?
Totally. I mean, we are the machine. We are always learning, just like machine learning.
Yeah.
And you're absolutely right. Are we not doing the same things, whether it's learning by experience or reading or doing or exploring or experimenting? I mean, it's all kind of the same nuance.
Yeah. And if we're drawing a panda, we've seen a panda somewhere to know what it looks like to be pandas able to draw it, right? Like, it already existed in order. We're not creating new animals, you know, Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, we could. Maybe ChatGPT can't, or other AI tools, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, actually, you can maybe ask that, like, create a new animal that's never been done. Maybe
you can totally do that. Give me a super panda corn. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I feel like that would be part of one of your children's book that you put together, the panda unicorn of sorts. I honestly haven't read your children's book, but it is pretty interesting that you've put this out there. Why did you choose to put together a children's book? Like, what made you do that?
You know, I wrote two of them, and the first one was because my daughter, who is now 21, when she was young, she was learning English, French, and Spanish under the same roof, and it was hard for her to differentiate between languages. And she we would call it language soup. We understood what she was saying, but nobody else did, right?
Yeah.
So she would mix up the languages and the words. So I created this book that can be sung into a tune, so it's repeatable and it's memorable for kids, and it's fun.
Yeah.
And it differentiates between the English word, the French word, and the Spanish word. So it's at a very, like, rudimentary level, but it allows them to understand there are different languages and there are different things. They sound different. They're really cool sounds. And accompanying that with some really beautiful visuals, it got kids excited about learning languages. And that's really what I wanted to do with that.
Interesting. Okay. And I guess, like, this came about from your own, I guess, experience of seeing your children doing this. And I guess, like, why did you choose to make it public? Because you could just do it for yourself, right? But you chose to kind of make it public. And I feel like it's probably not for kind of like a revenue option. Like, books are not always that profitable, depending on how you do it. But what was kind of the purpose of making that public?
I think just where we live, there's a lot of bilingualism and trilingualism. There's children who are learning different kinds of languages, certainly not only those three, but households that probably have a very similar challenge. And what I wanted to do is just kind of share that. Like, here's an approach that you can try. And whether you use the book or you use that method, that's really just what I wanted to put out in the world. And okay. Share that, you know, one, language learning is fun, and it can be. It doesn't have to be a chore. Introducing languages at a young age is a really smart thing to do, both, you know, knowledge-wise and culturally. But also, you know, this same kind of idea can be used for any languages that a child is learning.
Okay. Well, we'll put the book information in the show notes, so anyone listening can check that. And I guess a question I could ask you, did you use AI to create your book?
Well, that was written, you know, quite a few years ago. So no, that was all done by, you know, using this brain and, you know, a very, very talented illustrator who really poured her heart into creating, you know, amazing visuals.
Cool. Yeah. The visuals, I think, is just super important, especially for kids or even myself. Like, I like reading books that have images and diagrams and all of that just makes it easier to follow. So that's super cool. I guess on your side, like you've got your own shop that you've basically been helping a lot of companies on the revenue side, marketing front. Like, if someone wanted to hire a fractional chief revenue officer or a chief marketing officer like you, how does that even work, right? Like, is there a monthly retainer? Is it like a percentage of revenue growth? Like, how does that usually work out?
Yeah, it could be a different way. And what I usually find works best is that there's a retainer, and you just come when you have a challenge, unless you have a very specific project. And then you can put a figure around, you know, how much time that project will take to work through. Or if you just want to, you know, have a jam session. I love those, you know, because that's where the business leader comes. We come together, and for, you know, half a day or a day, or maybe we split it into two parts. We just, you know, jam on these specific issues, and we hammer out strategies for as many as we can. And those are so productive. And I find those are a good introduction to determining, you know, one, you know, are we a good fit? And then two, you know, should we work together? And I think, you know, not everybody needs a chief revenue officer. Not everybody needs a chief marketing officer. But once you start feeling the pains of revenue coming in the door or not coming in the door, growth pains are usually the trigger point to get help like mine. And, you know, that's when we start to look at different models of working together.
Interesting. Yeah. And I'm sure those jam sessions are part of the fun of the work that you do, you know, like, I mean, I think of like our own work when we do some like tax planning stuff, like when we have like a strategy chat with a client around some tax planning, for me, like that's part of the fun of the job is like the challenge and like, okay, let's try to think of some cool ideas and like what else could be done here. And, you know, so I imagine you enjoy that kind of part of your life too.
Oh yeah. Like having, you know, what are the problems to solve? That puts a fire in my belly. It's like, let's solve this problem. Let's not leave this room until we solve it. And those are the most fun, to be honest.
And I mean, like, inherently in sales and marketing, there's a lot of expectations and goals that you set for yourself, that your clients maybe set for you. And it must be pretty big, like kind of an emotional roller coaster on a regular basis of trying to reach your, you know, really high goals, and sometimes you meet them, sometimes you don't. And so how do you manage that stress in your own life?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is to create measurable goals. So can we actually measure what we're trying to do, whether it be a marketing campaign, a strategy, allocating spend, or, you know, creating compensation plans for salespeople, optimizing a pipeline? What do we want to accomplish? And then being able to measure that. And is it realistic? I mean, yeah, we all want to make kajillions, no question, sure. But your goal of kajillions on year one, probably not that realistic. So let's create a pathway to get to, maybe not the kajillion mark, but to the mark that you want to get to. That could take, you know, a little bit of time. But if you create a pathway and you are building towards that, that's the absolute key. But I think that a lot of companies need to be very honest with what they can deliver, what the people can deliver. And that's based on what's happening in the industry. That's based on the market potential for what they offer. All of those things have to be taken into consideration. And sometimes it's a reality check. But as long as we're being honest and we're using data to tell the story, and if you start exceeding those goals, well, then move the bar a little higher and then see how far you can go.
And because I guess in your own life, you would have kind of gone through some various successes and likely some failures. And so how do you deal with those, I'm going to say, failures or issues when they do arise? Do you have like methods that you personally use for like stress reduction or kind of like to be able to manage difficult times?
Yeah, for me, I mean, you know, when you get stressed out, you know, you get those feelings. Maybe you're tense. Maybe you start feeling a little bit of aches and pains. Maybe you're getting headaches. Maybe, you know, you're spending a little bit more time kind of on your phone and seeing what's happening next. We're really tied to the data. Refresh. Is the data changing? Those are signals to tell you to, okay, wait a second, take a step back. And then in that way, you know, if you disconnect in order to reconnect. For me, it's taking a walk. For me, it's doing a paddle, you know, getting out there, doing some yoga. But I think the most important thing is rely on data to tell a story and then go into that direction. Because even sometimes when you're really passionate about something, you can get really worked up about getting there in your own way. But if it's not working, don't be afraid to say that, hey, this didn't work. No worries. Let's do something else. And not being so tied to an idea that, you know, maybe it's just not the right time. Maybe it's just not the right industry. Maybe it's not for you. But don't look at failure as being something that that is a problem, because everything is a learning experience.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great advice. And I guess for you, you know, you've got to, as a solopreneur or as a small business owner, you got to motivate yourself on a regular basis to do what you do, right? And a lot of us small business owners have that innate like motivation sometimes, but sometimes you kind of lose that, right? And so what motivates you personally to do what it is that you do?
Yeah, I think I'm very, very lucky in that, you know, when my client and I choose each other, because we do make that choice. Mm. I get excited about what they do, and they are so excited about what they can do.
Right.
And I'm very deliberate in terms of choosing people, you know, people and technology, for example, that I can get behind 100%. And if you feel that you're falling behind that, you know, you've got to say, well, mm-hmm. is this really, you know, a good fit any longer?
Okay.
And, but if this is still like the, having that fire in your belly, and again, I'm really deliberate about the people and companies I choose to work with, in that, you know, I'm excited for them. I am excited to meet them every day or every second day, whatever our arrangement happens to be. Or I'm excited to just like, let's draw all over this whiteboard and get this solved. that excitement is what keeps me going. And knowing that, okay, we've accomplished this, amazing. Let's go to this next level.
Yeah. Well, speaking of next levels, what's your next level? Like what's next for you? Is it another children's book? Is it, you know, getting another client? Like what's the next big challenge for Anastasia?
You know, right now for me, I'm really loving working with startups and scale ups and business leaders, especially the up and coming ones who have such great ideas, great technology or great offerings to put into this world. So working with them on a fractional basis is really where I want to be right now. And having that flexibility to do that from wherever I am with whoever is I'm working with on the planet is really great for me. It's really fulfilling.
Amazing. Love it. Yeah. And that's a lot of the freedom that small business owners get, right? Like is that you get to choose your clients, you get to choose the work that you do to some extent. At some point you got to like actually generate your revenue, but like you've mentioned earlier, it's about trying to figure out who's your target client and how do you deliver them their service and really narrowing down and not just taking on any and every work, but like in the long term, focusing on how you can add value to your target client. And then you kind of keep those relationships. And that seems really interesting. And I guess overall here, we're running out of time here, but is there anything else that you feel that maybe we missed in our conversation here? Anything that you think our listeners should know more about?
No, you know, I just think, you know, to put your best work in the world, you got to be at your best. So if you feel that, you know, you're starting to experience some fatigue or you're starting to feel, you know, a little, you know, down about things, take the time you need to get back up. Give yourself what you need, what your body is craving. Just listen to it. We don't do that very often and we need to do that more. So nobody wants to see anyone burned out, and we want to see all the greatness that people have to put out into the world. So make sure you're giving as much to yourself as much as you're giving to your business.
Yeah. And I can attest for sure. Like it's hard to kind of like as a business owner to kind of make that decision and say, I should take Tuesday off or I should do a half day today. And, you know, it's kind of like you feel that underlying pressure of the rest of the team is kind of like working. So you should be working, or you know, you kind of are having to hustle, trying to grow the business, trying to, you know, and why are you taking time off? And, you know, so like, yeah, I certainly feel that pressure. And I know a lot of small business owners can feel that pressure on a regular basis. So I think our message to our audience here is we give you permission, like take the time you need, take the day off. We won't tell anyone, take the time to go and relax, go for your walk, do your thing. So that's really cool.
Or have a no meeting day so you can get shit done. Like,
that's true, right? We should do more of those. Like, yeah. And then I guess, Anastasia, how do people get a hold of you if they want to reach out?
Oh gosh, you know, just connect with me on LinkedIn or head to my website at AnastasiaValentine.com, and I'm happy to chat anytime.
Awesome. Okay. This is amazing. Thanks for all the value you're providing today. I love getting right into it, getting all the value right up front and kind of talking about all these various topics that really add a lot of value to small business owners. So very much thank you for your time today. And I hope you have a rest of the day is amazing for you. Yeah.
Awesome. You too. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm looking forward to the podcast.
Awesome. Thank you to our sponsor, IC360 Solutions. Working with modern IT should be simple yet secure. If your current provider hasn't made you feel that way, you probably haven't modernized. IC360 Solutions is a modern virtual IT department that will set things up so that they work for you from any location and any type of device. As a Microsoft partner with exclusive focus on their cloud platforms, they will do it right and get you there quickly. Reach out to IC360 at ic360.ca and give your team the latest and greatest platforms so that they can get their work done.
So on our next episode, we've got James Baker from Keynote Search, who helps us better understand the real insights into some of the top recruiting, retention, and employee culture tactics that you can use in your small business. Follow now on your podcast provider to get notified of this episode and more. Don't forget to rate and review this episode as well. Thanks.